Small Town Missing. I'm Thomas.
I'm Will.
And I'm Rhonda.
And on today's episode, we're talking about Johnny Ghosh.
My turn?
Yeah, your turn.
All right. Well, let's get started. Yeah, Johnny Ghosh was 12 years old when he went missing from West Des Moines, Iowa, on Sunday morning, September 5th, 1982, while picking up papers for his paper route. Okay, now what does everybody think of when they think of Iowa?
Oh,
I think Midwest.
Yeah, like I don't think much of anything anywhere.
Yeah, I think basically a town. White picket fences.
Riverdale.
Basic. Yeah. like stereotypical, slice of apple pie.
Yeah,
America.
Small American town.
I think of, acres and acres of cornfields and, like you say, the white picket fences and the white farmhouses and dirt roads and pickup trucks and, mid-America, I guess.
Yeah, it's like exactly. Idyllic and simplistic.
I literally think of the town from American Pie.
I think of Riverdale.
It's just the basic average town.
Yep.
Everybody has a decent house. Everybody's just, hi there, neighbor. Ugh. And it's like, no matter how weird... Yeah, things get, everything's normal.
Kind of be creepy a little bit too, almost.
That does sound a little creepy, doesn't it?
Except for Wise, man.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, I think of the movie Field of Dreams, honestly, whenever I think of Iowa.
I didn't even think about that.
And yeah.
I don't even know if it was made in Iowa, but that's what I think of.
Mm-hmm.
True.
Okay. All right. Well, let's move on with Johnny's story. On the morning of September 5th, Johnny's brother knocked on his door to make sure he was awake. According to Charlie Project, Johnny wasn't allowed to go on his paper route alone. And he had asked his parents the day before if he could do his route by himself, but his parents wouldn't allow it. That morning, he didn't wake his dad up as he usually did, but left his home at 5:45, taking his dachshund Gretchen with him.
Oh, Gretchen!
Other carriers could put Johnny at the paper drop. This is the last sighting of Johnny by multiple witnesses.
Mm.
From the Des Moines Register, and I'm going to be citing several different sources as I go through this. Okay. But they'll all be listed at in our show notes at the end. From the Des Moines Register article by Frank Santiago, September 4th, 1983, John Rossi was one of those witnesses. He was picking up bundles of paper for his kids to deliver. He saw Ghosh talking with a man sitting in a blue car.
Mm.
The man was asking directions. Johnny asked Rossi if he could help, and Rossi provided the directions. According to Charlie Project, this was at 42nd Street and Marquardt Lane, and the car was a two-tone blue Ford Fairmont.
So already a little stranger danger in the story, it seems like.
A little bit, and I don't know if I'll have to look and see if I've got this in my sources at the end of the show, but I had read some information about Rossi and just a ton of remorse for not... paying more attention to what was going on, not, I guess, having a better feel for what the guy looked like. And I'm not sure on any of the sources I looked at, there were any sketches of what this guy looked like.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the worst things about daily life is that you get so used to things. Hey, there's just a car on the side, on the street. There's just a car parked there.
Yeah, guy talking to a kid.
Yeah, it's just like, he could just have been asking him for directions, and the guy didn't know, so he came to me next.
Well, you don't really typically think that people are going to be nefarious just off the top of your,
You just go about life, and then you read something horrible in the news, and it's traumatizing.
Yeah, in retrospect, you're like, hey, I wish I would have done something
differently. Oh my gosh, I was there.
Yep.
I was literally there.
Exactly.
Yeah. And to move on, this is kind of a different take on what happened. This came from iowacoldcases.org and part of an interview with Noreen Ghosh, Johnny's mother, who did an interview with WHO TV Channel 13's Aaron Brillbeck on November 11th, 2010. This is regarding the man in the blue Ford Fairmont. Quote, "The man shut off his engine, opened the passenger door, and swung his feet out on the curb right where the boys were assembling their papers, and he started talking about where's 86th Street. Johnny turned to Mike and said, 'I've got my papers loaded in the wagon. I'm scared. I'm getting out of here. I'm heading home.' According to the boys, the driver left when Johnny left." This is another quote from that interview. "The man pulled the door shut and started up the engine, but before he left, he reached up and flicked the dome light 3 times.
That sounds odd.
Yes. Noreen thinks this was a signal for someone else to follow Johnny. And Noreen Ghosh goes on to say that one of the boys saw a man come out from between two houses and start following Johnny. And there's also a reference to someone following Johnny in the Quad City Times article by Linda Cook, November 20th, 2016.
Oh, wow. So, I don't know. We hear things like that on social media all the time. Like, you know, oh, don't get in your car if you have a string attached to the, you know, like those things that you read, like the clickbait things.
Yeah. But it is true. People have signals and they follow different patterns.
Yeah, I wonder if it's like a human, I mean, this is speculation, of course, like a human trafficking type of situation. You know, I don't know. When was this, Rhonda? Like, when did this take place?
1982.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, maybe.
Maybe, but I'd be more concerned if it was like, if we saw evidence of ransom kind of thing.
Yeah, maybe.
But I don't know. It just sounds weird.
It does. I wonder, like, you know, especially because we're talking about what, Des Moines? Or no.
West Des Moines.
West Des Moines. So, I mean, like, how much money is there? I mean, I guess there might be money. I don't know. I guess I'd have to, you know, see who all lives there.
Know more about it. But at the same time, what I'm wondering, you haven't got to this point in the story, so maybe I shouldn't be jumping ahead.
You're doing to me.
I really don't know, because I am wondering if there's a ransom inquiry. So, If there's not one, it makes me suspicious that maybe during the abduction, during the kidnapping, maybe something happened and he died.
Yeah, I could see that.
And that would make me believe that. Whereas with what's going on, it does sound like human trafficking, but we don't really think of human trafficking cases that far back.
Yeah, true.
We
think
of more in like the 90s and early 2000s. And onward.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with this, I'd be expecting more of a ransom situation.
Okay, so I can definitely see
that. If there's no ransom, it makes me think that when he tried to run away or when events happened, he didn't make it.
Mm-hmm. I can definitely see that.
That's what I'm thinking.
Okay, we'll stay tuned.
Rhonda will let us know.
Okay, yeah, I'm just getting into this. Yeah. Okay, Johnny's parents didn't know there was a problem until customers started calling around 7 a.m. asking, where's their paper? John Ghosh, Johnny's father, checked the neighborhood. He found Johnny's wagon with newspapers two blocks from their home.
So he didn't make it too
far?
That's
not good.
Mm-mm. At first, police thought Ghosh had run away. And at the time, Johnny could not be classified as missing until 72 hours had passed.
Oh,
which
bet.
We've seen something like this before.
But that's like with a 12-year-old. You know, that's so...
Yeah, I don't think that's actually a policy anymore.
No, not anymore. Back then, maybe, for sure.
I'm pretty sure if there's a suspicion of abduction or suspicion that something's happened, they investigate immediately.
Yeah.
They put out a missing person immediately.
Yeah, especially with a younger...
You are asking some really good questions, Thomas. You really are.
Yeah. I mean, it's... Yeah. Just, it's too suspect for me.
It is suspect.
Yeah, and I don't know... I'm not sure necessarily if this was policy in police departments, or it was like, hey, let's just wait because, you know, maybe these children, the kid has run away and he'll be back, you know, in a bit. He's not going to be gone overnight.
Like he's run away, because it sounds like he was at home. He left his wagon full of newspapers. If he's going to run away, why the hell did he go and get
newspapers? Yeah, why did he get the newspapers?
What was the point of that?
Like I said, good question.
I know.
I mean, that just makes absolutely no sense.
Rhonda, we know you know the answers.
I know the answers.
This should not be the case.
I agree.
If it looks like a duck, it sounds like a duck. It's a duck.
It's a duck.
So why aren't they investigating this? Why aren't they looking into a kid suddenly disappearing on his newspaper route when he told people, hey, I'm going home?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, let me go on with this. Like I said, you've asked some very good questions.
I think this is the most I've talked in the
I know. I'm glad.
Yeah, you rarely talk. You just
do our producing. Board.
Okay, I couldn't find a lot on the searches that occurred at the time of his disappearance other than law enforcement and locals joined in the search. And I don't know how quickly police began treating this as an actual abduction.
Yeah.
Okay. During the first couple of years, sightings of Ghosh were reported in Florida and Texas. According to Noreen, a boy called three times one night in February 1984, but the calls didn't last long enough to be traced.
Mm.
The person sounded drugged or injured. This is from the Lewiston Daily Sun, September 5th, 1984, by Margaret Stafford. This is the same year Eugene Wade Martin, age 14, had disappeared. Eugene was also a paper carrier and disappeared while picking up his Des Moines Sunday Register papers.
What is happening in Des Moines?
Hold up a second. Wasn't there a movie that just came out, The Black Phone, Ethan Hawke.
Oh, yeah, I've seen
that.
Doesn't
that sound a lot like this?
It does kind of sound like that.
Oh, I'm not familiar with it. I'll have to check
What's
into
the premise,
that.
Thomas? Do you remember?
I never watched it. I only saw the trailer with you when we were watching a movie.
It's like abduction and then taken to like a basement.
Kids have been abducted all over this small town. And it went supernatural, but basically it was like eventually the kid like found ways to get out and make phone calls.
It does sound.
He would try and make phone calls from the house while the guy was drunk on the chair because he thought kid was tied up.
Yeah, and what are the odds that they call Johnny's family, you know, or something like that, you know, of all the things.
Three times,
yeah.
Well, it was one night, but yeah, three times. So, and that was the same paper that Johnny was picking up. Witnesses saw Martin talking to a man described as clean cut and appearing to be in his 30s. Eugene has never been found.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Allen, age 13, disappeared March 29th, 1986, while on his way to a friend's house in Des Moines. He was not a paper carrier, but these disappearances occurred in the same general area, and Mark has never been found.
Yeah, and also like similar ages and stuff like that, because you said, what, 12 and 14-ish or whatever?
12, 13, and 14.
So, yeah, early
teenage
years.
Like there's typing going on.
Like, yeah.
Like they have a, what is it?
M.O., particular M.O. or something like that?
Modus operandi, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, the Ghosches hired a private detective soon after Johnny disappeared. He followed up on every sighting. The closest he came was within 4 days of the boy and a man who is always with him.
Mm.
Numerous private detectives have worked on the case over the years. Noreen Ghosh became active in increasing awareness of crimes involving children, including public appearances, work on two documentaries, testifying before Congress before hearings on organized crime.
Mm-hmm.
From Des Moines Register, February 7th, 1999, an article by Frank Santiago, Noreen Ghosh her son visited her in 1997.
What?
Yeah, interesting. She provided this information when she testified in a 1999 pedophile crime organization trial in Nebraska. According to Noreen, the young man arrived in the middle of the night in March 1997 along with an unidentified man.
Mm-hmm.
The two stayed for over an hour. Johnny told his mother he'd been taken by members of a pedophile crime ring.
Yeah.
He had eventually escaped, but had to keep a low profile. And during this conversation, Noreen said that Johnny seemed to be seeking approval from the other man before he was speaking.
Okay.
I don't know if there were things that... She does not know who this man was. I guess he was never introduced. He was just there. And I don't know if... I don't know how to describe it.
That was a suspect.
Yeah, but he seemed to be, you know, like if there were certain things he couldn't answer, maybe things he couldn't ask. I'm not sure. And, and this guy was basically, and I don't know if it was a verbal thing or just some other acknowledgement about, yes, you can speak or what.
Okay. Yeah.
So what I'm thinking.
I don't buy it.
I'm thinking either, if what she's saying is real, big if, given the way this sounds. This does not sound believable at all to me. Personally, but if what she's saying is true, then my two thoughts would be either this was one of the captors who was owned him or whatever, or FBI or some other organization. He's gotten into witness protection, and he's just coming back to give his mom closure before he goes into hiding.
Oh, kind of like I'm saying goodbye, kind of a thing. Gotcha. I hadn't thought of that.
I'm giving you all the information I'm allowed to give you. I'm only able to give you so much because it could put you in danger. So he's here to make sure I don't accidentally risk your life.
Yeah, and I guess he said he... My thing, though, is that if he's allegedly been taken by this pedophile ring or whatever, I guess he escaped. But to me, like, why would they keep him? This is, what, 15 years after his initial disappearance or something like that?
Well, we don't know exactly when he escaped.
Oh, okay. So it makes me wonder. So... Okay, that maybe answers my question a little more. But if this is 15 years after and maybe he had just escaped or something like that, he'd be a little old. Like, I don't really see, like, why, like, especially a pedophile ring. Like, I don't know. I figure like, after...
Because, he went missing in 84, right?
82, right?
82, yes. 82. I'm sorry, 82.
So this is 17 years later. So this is a 29-year-old man.
Well, like I said, we don't know when he escaped.
No, I'm saying when he came... To visit her.
Yeah.
Oh, so 15 years later, so he he would be a 27-year-old man when he came to visit her.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Allegedly so reported.
There's a lot of things not adding up.
Yeah. Well,
anyway,
she said that she's never seen him. She's never been contacted since. And there are some questions as to whether or not this visit occurred, or was it possibly an imposter pretending to be Johnny?
It could be
maybe
something
mean.
Maybe
it was just a dream that she had to give herself closure.
Well, I mean, that is a possibility. And her husband, or I should say ex-husband at this point, John Ghosh, couldn't confirm the visit because he and Noreen had divorced several years earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Like I said, there is some question as to whether or not the visit occurred, but it is something that she says that she has seen him, basically to say, I'm okay, but I have to
leave. Yeah.
I cannot come back to this town.
Yeah. Which I can understand.
Now I'm curious, though. You said that his brother woke him up.
Yes.
How's the brother doing?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't see any other mention about the brother.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
I was just curious because it usually messes up families. So I was just curious if they mentioned him or if he had any involvement at all.
Well, I'm sure that it's, one of those things that would break up a family. I mean, I guess when Natalie Holloway and everything disappeared back in 2005 or so, I guess.
Yeah.
I know her family and stuff is now divorced. I'm sure it's a super hard thing to go through. I couldn't even imagine.
No, I couldn't either. Okay, from Charlie Project in 2006, Noreen and others connected with the case received photos, either through the internet or anonymous deliveries, of three boys, one resembling Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
The three were bound and gagged. Noreen believes these pictures include her son, but Florida investigators state these photos were from the 1970s and the subjects had posed willingly.
Oh, okay.
Mm. Yeah, and Iowa officials believe someone played a cruel joke.
Oh, 100%. 100% I think it was a cruel joke.
From KCCI Des Moines, September 5th, 2022, segment with Scott Carpenter, Sergeant Jason Hines of West Des Moines Police says the case is still being worked and still receiving tips.
Oh, that's cool.
He also says Johnny's disappearance changed the country. Iowa passed law in 1984, the Johnny Ghosh Bill, mandating police respond immediately to reports of missing children when there's the possibility of foul play.
Yes.
There you go, Thomas.
About time.
Rhonda answered the question.
Yes.
Yeah. They've been plaguing us the entire episode.
To me, that just is... Listen, and I know nothing about police work or anything like that. I act like I do on this podcast.
It just sounds like it'd be common sense,
yeah,
right?
Common sense. Well, also, like, he went out... Like, it was his normal thing to do the paper route, and he's gone.
He had the papers. He told people, I'm going home.
I'm scared. He said that, you know?
Do some investigation here, people.
Exactly.
There's enough evidence to say there's something suspicious going
exactly.
on.
Something sus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Johnny's mother said it took police 45 minutes to arrive after she reported Johnny missing.
Mm-hmm.
Bull.
Well, that's a long time, too.
Do you have any idea how pissed off I would be if I was a parent and it took the cops 45 minutes to come and check up on my kid missing?
Well, 45 minutes to get onto any freeway or highway or whatever's near there, and just be gone. Bye.
Yeah. Well, the bill changed that.
Exactly.
So they have to respond immediately. And obviously, just from what we've gone through here, Noreen believes that her son was kidnapped by a pedophile ring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As probably these days we would refer to it as a trafficking ring.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And John Walsh, which you guys have heard of John Walsh, obviously, has featured Johnny several times on his shows. And he said that he believes that it was a pedophile in that area at that time. We've got three boys that disappeared, within 4 years of each other?
Yeah, similar age and everything.
Yeah, so that's what he thinks. And again, we'll put that in the show notes too. But very interesting because, like you've said before, Thomas, 1982... we didn't think of human trafficking, which now it's very prevalent.
Yeah, it's very prevalent. Yeah. I mean, you have so many documentaries about it and stuff like that. And, well, Rhonda, what do you think? Do you think that thing with the mom, and you think that was legit or whatever? Like, had Johnny coming back and visiting?
I'd say it's definitely possible. Now, whether or not it was really Johnny or it was someone, again, I wouldn't say necessarily a prank, but somebody just doing something cruel.
Yeah.
It was an imposter, not Johnny.
Yeah.
I think that's also very possible.
The fact that I've never really, I think I have heard of this case before. It sounds familiar, but haven't delved into the facts like you have. Like, it's crazy to me to think that could, that could potentially happen. Like, that's so crazy.
Yeah. Well, so many of these cases just sound insane that could actually happen.
Yeah. 100%.
Listen to them, like, Oh, there's just no evidence. They're just gone.
Yep.
Yeah. And not a trace.
Mm-mm.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, let me just wrap up this segment. Juanita Lee Estevez from Yuba City, California, was abducted in November of 1984, and she escaped her captors in 1986. The milk carton featuring Johnny and Juanita in 1984 is included in Life magazine's list of the top 100 photographs that changed the world.
Wow, that's so crazy. Right. I bet I've seen that photograph,
probably,
too.
Oh, well,
you
not
have, you,
do you guys,
curiosity to you.
Yeah, I don't know when they got rid of the milk carton kids, because I remember it.
I don't know. Do you remember milk yeah. Like in where we went? I don't even remember that.
In the 90s, yeah.
Maybe in the 90s.
I don't remember ever seeing it, because we got different kind of milk, because what they'd put them on would be the like the cardboard
carton. Oh, yeah. Yes.
So we would get the plastic jugs.
Oh, okay.
Here where we are.
I see.
Yeah, now that was phased out because some child psychiatrist said that it disturbed children to see pictures of missing children on the cartons. But to me, it's like everybody had, usually, I would think, back then, had milk in their house.
Yeah.
And that was one way to get children out there, which we don't see that much now.
Yeah.
But of course we do, we have other resources like Amber Alerts to get notification out when a child is missing or abducted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do gotta say, they kind of failed not screwing our generation up.
Yeah.
Regardless,
true.
So
I think
we're all damaged.
Well, you know, I feel like now, I guess it's been supplemented kind of by the playing cards. Like, you know, we've been talking sometimes about the playing cards that are in circulation in some prisons and everything of missing persons cases. Mm-hmm. So I guess, like, at least maybe there's a way to still get information out somehow, maybe even if it's not the milk cartons.
True.
Yeah, and now, like I said, it's not hard to believe that children are abducted and put into sex trafficking rings, but back then...
Unheard of.
Yeah, it was, and these cases kind of brought that crisis out for people to... more visibility on it. And you can find an age-progressed picture of Johnny on Charlie Project, and also some of the other sources that we've got have him at age 51. And if you have any information on Johnny's disappearance, you can contact the West Des Moines Police Department at 515-223-3211.
Rhonda, that's such a good story. How I've never heard some of these facts, and you just put it all for me in there with like a nice bow. It sounded so good.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad I answered Thomas's questions.
Yeah, you definitely did.
Usually I'm the one asking him.
I played Will tonight.
Yes, I know. I like it.
I played
it.
Will very well.
I think you did. Better than me. My voice sounds a little less, you know.
Well, my voice is a little messed up right now. I got a little bit of the...
The congestion.
The allergy congestion going on.
Hey,
so
it is the season.
It is.
Yep. Well, before we wrap up our podcast, I do have an update on one of our prior episodes.
Come on.
And it's Mara Murray.
Oh, my fave.
Okay. Yes, yes. And remember, she disappeared. She crashed her tree or her car into a tree. I'm sorry, crashed her tree.
I'm sorry, she drove a tree?
She drove a tree.
Sorry
she
about
drove
that.
Drove a tree into a car?
Yeah, that's okay. Exactly what I was thinking.
Okay.
And in, I think it was Haverhill, New Hampshire.
Yes, I believe
sorry,
that's right.
I thought I had it in my notes, but I don't. But anyway, this is an update from the U.S. Sun, July 16th, 2022, by Elsa Buchanan. And state prosecutors and police have now announced they have returned to two New Hampshire towns, Landoff and Easton, to undertake a more extensive search surrounding areas that have previously searched in a more limited fashion. Mm-hmm. We have no clues, we have no answers, so any little clue would help us.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that was from Maura's sister, Julie Murray. But I don't know what the police may have, why they're going back necessarily. And I wish I could recall, and I don't have that in my notes, when she disappeared.
I think it was 2004. I think that was.
I was thinking it was close to 20 years ago.
Yeah, but yeah. I think I remember saying it was nearly 20, but I think it was 2004. And the thing with that case is that we were talking about it and speculating, you know, our worst enemy, I'm sure, on this podcast, but that some of the things could be, like, she could have either been abducted or it could have just been something that she went out into the forest. Like, either way, you know, it could be, like, we could see either way.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, because as I recall, it was, I don't know if it was late winter, maybe early spring, but there was snow on the ground.
Yeah.
It was incredibly cold. It was night. So, you know, she could have wandered off and gotten lost, fallen, whatever.
Yeah. Because allegedly she had been drinking around that time. We don't know for sure, but I think that was just the common thought process during that time.
Yeah, because she'd purchased some alcohol on her way out of town.
Yes, and it was just the circumstances surrounding her disappearance are very odd, but who knows? Maybe they'll find something.
I hope so, but we'll keep everyone posted. And thanks, everybody, for listening. If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. And you can reach us on Instagram, Small Town Missing. And we'll have another episode next week.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Catch you next time.